Our next panelist is Sergei Plekhanov, who's the professor of political science. Many of us in the peace movement know him already. He's professor of political science in the Center for International and Security Studies at York University. Until 1993, he was the deputy director of the Institute for the Study of USA and Canada in the Academy of Sciences in Moscow. He's an example of what we call brain gain rather than brain drain. Terrible language, but the National Post uses it every day. I keep thinking that maybe they should write a headline talking about eminent people who've come to Canada and who, from which we have all benefited, and Sergei would be on the top of that list, in my view.
Thank you very much. My topic is the Russian response to the development of the NMD. And before I start, I'd like to sort of say a few things about this remark about deterrence. If deterrence is undermined by the development of the NMD, so much the worse for deterrence. And immediately when I heard that, I started thinking about political struggles in the Weimar Republic in the late 20s and early 30s, when the communists were thinking in the same way about bourgeois democracy, because they viewed the Weimar Republic as the best possible political system to maintain capitalism, and they viewed the Nazis as being so crude and stupid that in the interests of the proletarian revolution, it would be much better to let the Nazis destroy this bourgeois democratic facade of capitalist dictatorship, and then, as they were saying, today the Nazis, tomorrow us. And they still kept debating those philosophical differences with the social democrats in the labor camps, which Hitler created, and the world then rolled on to the Second World War. I think for all, and I'm familiar, I'm one of the people who have challenged the practice and theory of deterrence in debates inside the Soviet Union and the Russian Academy of Sciences and in those policy councils where new Russian foreign policy was being made by Gorbachev. And Gorbachev, of course, was very receptive to the critique of deterrence, and a number of things that he said and did actually helped move international thinking on these issues forward. But that was another era. That was another age. Today we are stuck with a situation where we might have to struggle to preserve deterrence in order to prevent worse things from happening, and then think about moving beyond to a better arrangement. I'll try to be very brief. The Russian factor is now a matter of debate between major political parties in the United States. The Republicans don't really think that Russian responses to the NMD need to be taken into account by the United States. In fact, they've criticized the Clinton administration for thinking too much about what the Russians might do. The Republicans seem to think that there's nothing that the Russians can do in case the U.S. does what it needs to do in their way, in their thinking. And that's because Russia is so insignificant and so bankrupt and so technologically backward and so on. The Democrats, the Clinton administration, seems to think that, yes, there are some dangerous things that the Russians can do, but the Russians can be managed. They can be brought aboard. So the diplomatic initiatives which the Clinton administration has carried out, trying to get the Russians aboard, were actually based on a somewhat more cautious assessment of how the Russians might actually react. But I think that it's really the question of how the Russian economy and the Russian military potential have deteriorated. That is really should be at the center of our thinking about the possible Russian responses, precisely because there has been this far-reaching deterioration of Russia's position in the world, Russia's economy, Russia's political influence, and Russia's defense potential. That should be seen as a source of the gravest danger. The assumption that they are so far gone that there's nothing they can do is so short-sighted, so stupid, I would say, that I find it hard to believe that serious policymakers may hold this view, but apparently they do. As far as the defense potential of Russia is concerned, they are stuck with a situation where their strategic arsenal is rapidly aging, and they have only very limited funds for the modernization of their strategic forces. In other words, Russia is disarming not because it likes disarmament, but because it does not seem to be able to rearm or modernize or keep the arsenal at the level where it is now, which is about 6,000 warheads, strategic warheads, based on three legs of the strategic triad. So the aging arsenal and several years, almost a decade of underinvestment into defense. Up until very recently, the Russian elites were relatively complacent about that because they operated on the assumption that partnership with the West, partnership with the United States, was so important to both sides that indeed Russia didn't really need all those weapons. That more complacent attitude has given way to an increasingly alarmist assessment by Russian elites, major Russian elites, of what's going to happen to Russia if these trends are allowed to continue. There is a mindset in the Kremlin, represented by the newly elected President Vladimir Putin, which can be summarized in a number of points. Number one, military power does count in today's world. They've looked at NATO expansion, they've looked at the Kosovo War, they've looked at the continued U.S. defense programs, including the NMD, and the message that they get observing what the United States does is that military power counts. And it also has to do with a number of threats to Russia, or perceived threats to Russia, that they register. In other words, from this point, there comes the conclusion that Russia needs to reinvest in military power. It needs to build up its conventional potential. Russia now has, in conventional forces, a little over 1 million men, but less than 100,000 of them are really battle-capable. And we're talking about a country which still occupies one-seventh of the world's dry land. And so and a country which senses that there are security threats, real or potential, virtually on all sides. NATO in the West, Islamic extremists from the South, and China potentially in the East. So there is a strong consensus that Russia needs to rebuild its military potential and that at this point it really does not have the funds to do it quickly. So for the period for the period of 10 or 15 years, Russia will have to rely more than ever before on its nuclear weapons. So the value of nuclear weapons has been upgraded in the thinking of Russian military and political leaders. Nuclear weapons are viewed not only as absolutely essential for deterring a major war against Russia, and that is a new development which has occurred in the past year, nuclear weapons are seen as usable in a conventional conflict where the Russian conventional forces won't be able to beat back challenges from other states. As an illustration of this thinking, in June of 1999, there was a staff exercise of the Russian military, which was based on a scenario that Poland invades the Kaliningrad region, which is a piece of Russian territory, former East Prussia, which is territorially not linked to the bulk of the Russian territory. So Kaliningrad is invaded by the Polish army. Poland is now a member of NATO, and Russia responds responds with nuclear weapons because its conventional forces are incapable of beating back this Polish thrust. So what we are witnessing in Russian military thinking is real steps back from a more enlightened attitude to the role of nuclear weapons from more enlightened thinking which existed under Gorbachev. And this is a very dangerous development, and we shouldn't underestimate the importance of where the magnitude of consequence is. So as Russia tries to pursue a realistic policy of rearmament based on this more alarmist assessment of its situation. The Russian leaders at the same time wouldn't like to do it in such a way as to alienate the West, if only because of pragmatic, realistic consideration, because of this power imbalance between Russia and the West. So they would like to do it as part of a larger political strategy. They would like to address their security threats in the context of a wider international effort to reduce the danger of conflict, the danger of war. It is a contradictory policy, but still they are trying to have it both ways, to try to prevent Russia from really disconnecting from the West on security matters, and at the same time to allow Russia to increase its military potential. The NMD is viewed as the absolutely intolerable challenge to Russia's security. It is viewed, if the NMD goes forward, the Russians will consider it a development which would pretty much annul their deterrent capability. In pure numerical terms, it is clear that at the current level of Russian military spending, they won't be able to maintain their strategic forces at the level of 6,000 warheads in the next 10 or 15 years. And in fact, the START III treaty, which hopefully will be negotiated between the United States and Russia, is predicated on bringing down the levels of the warheads on both sides to 2,500 or 2,000, which is considered as the maximum affordable by Russia. Now, if the NMD goes vigorously forward and becomes a reality, and at the same time the Russian missiles are becoming less numerous, if Russia reduces its offensive arms, then that actually, at least in theoretical terms, and in terms of the worst-case scenario, may create a situation where a first strike from the United States might be so effective as to allow the United States the disarmament of Russia in case of a conflict. A decapitating strike, a strike which obliterates the Russian strategic forces, the remnants of those forces left for the second strike would be taken care of by the National Missile Defense. Whenever one listens to discourse like this, one is left, of course, with a sense of hopelessness. I mean, this is total madness we're talking about. Why would the United States be considering a first strike? Because it is clear to us the ecological consequences of such a first strike would be so severe that no Russian response would be necessary in order to make life thoroughly unlivable for those in North America, not to mention Western Europe. But still, this highly artificial way of thinking remains in place, and in fact it has hardened in recent years as far as Russian leaders are concerned. And this is a reality that we must take into account. So the question for the Russian planners is whether they will proceed with their plans in coordination with the major Western powers and the rest of the world, or they do it alone. And that choice rides in many ways on the kinds of negotiations that are going on between Russia and the United States. The fact that the Clinton administration decided to postpone decision on the development of the National Missile Defense System allowed the current structure of cooperation between Russia and the United States on these issues to be preserved, but only for a while. It's a highly dynamic situation. Negotiations which are now continuing between the two sides are not very productive because the perspectives of the two sides remain widely apart. The Russians continue to insist that the NMD presents an intolerable threat to the ABM Treaty, to Russia's security, to international security, and to the ABM Treaty. The United States continues to insist that with some modifications of the ABM Treaty, the two things, the NMD and the ABM Treaty, can be maintained. This apparently is not going to be acceptable to the Russian side. When considering the options, the Russians are stuck with a situation where if they accept the American invitation to go into serious weakening of the ABM Treaty, they are likely to gradually come to the situation of intolerable threat to their deterrent. The other option would be to face the reality that the Americans are pulling them down the path where they wouldn't like to go, and to discontinue the dialogue with the United States, to abrogate the START 1 and START 2 treaties, and to proceed on a unilateralist assumption that Russia is a great and sovereign state which can pretty much define by itself what its security needs are and what needs to be done to address those security needs. The most worrisome thing about that it would require the unilateralist approach and the degree of rearmament that would be needed in order to address the Russian security needs under this type of arrangement would require a total mobilization of the Russian economy, its society, its resources for the kind of rearmament which would be comparable to what Stalin did to Russia in the 1930s. It would certainly require something nearly totalitarian, like a nearly or perhaps totalitarian regime to be established. A regime in which the sense of isolation from the outside world, the sense of hostility of the outside world to Russia, would be reinforced by the action-reaction process that will develop from such a decision. I think it's obvious that pushing Russia into this type of posture would be pregnant with maximum dangers. In fact, losing Russia may mean losing the world. In order to keep Russia in a situation of partnership with the West, keep Russia in this negotiating mode, where it is prepared to address some of the concerns which are expressed by the United States, but at the same time to maintain its own sense of security, becomes a task which is absolutely crucial, because allowing those unilateralist-minded forces in Russia to sway Russian policy in this direction is going to create a drastically new situation. It might not be then possible to contain the momentum of Russian totalitarianism, logically leading to another world war. Thank you.